Good afternoon. It is now at 4:33 p.m. Today is Wednesday, February 6th. I'm Max Gruenberg, and we are here with the House Hess Committee. We're having hearings on House Concurrent Resolution 2, House Bill 67, and House Bill 88, all relating to the protection of children. We have a quorum of the committee present. Present here is Representative Katie Hurley, Representative Robin Taylor, Co-Chairman Nilo Kopanen, Representative David Thompson. There being a quorum of the committee, we are ready to commence taking testimony via teleconference around the state on these pieces of legislation. The first witness is the public defender, Dana Fabe, from Anchorage. Ms. Fabe, are you ready and available to testify?
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. That participant has not arrived at our center at this time.
Fine. The witness is in order. Is there Monty Flusher from Barrow?
Monty Flusher, yes, I'm here.
Would you care to testify, sir? Please give us the name, your name, spell your last name, and indicate to us the group you represent, if any.
Yes. Thank you. My name is Monty Flusher. That's S, like in Sam, L-U-S-H-E-R. I'm testifying as an individual. I'm not testifying as part of the organization I work for.
Mr. Flusher, before you begin, I'd like to advise all of the witnesses that we have so many witnesses from around the state that I'm going to hold your direct testimony, excluding questions by the committee, to 3 minutes. And we'll be fairly strict on that, and I'd appreciate it if you'd limit your time accordingly so that everybody can get a chance to testify. Mr. Flusher, if you would commence.
Thank you. I'm testifying based on living here in the state for 18 years. I've been employed in the past as a state social worker. I've been both a school teacher and a school administrator. In addition, I have graduate training in theology and work as a volunteer in the Episcopal Church. And I have some objections to some of the concepts that are outlined in the legislation. I want to begin by saying, even though I have some objections to some of the material, I do feel strongly about the need to curb child abuse and agree with some of the concepts that you have in the bill. My disagreement begins with the concept of having child care organizations having the ability to do the background checks. I think the legislation neglects the area of looking at a statute of limitations. How far back does a violation of law indicate that person is not eligible for employment? The proposal that you put forth would create a jeopardy to the organization. If they fail to do the background check, they might be held liable or negligent in their employment practices. On the other hand, without some guidelines, how do we know where that negligence or liability would extend? I think that needs to be looked at very carefully before we depart upon such a massive check. The definition of the organizations that should do the checks in the legislation, not the House concurrent resolution, but the legislation, would imply to me that any daycare center, whether it be private or public, any club or organization, whether it be Boy Scouts or Girls Club or 4-H or any organization that has some responsibility for working with children would also begin to use this sort of a background check, and I think that that would cause a great flood of background checks to check on. The other area of disagreement is the area of mandatory reporting by counselors and clergy who do counseling. There are very few churches that have the privilege of a confessional. The Catholic Church, the Orthodox, and in some instances the Episcopal Church has that privilege, but most Reformed churches do not have, quote, confessional, unquote. And the problem there being that if a counselor in a church setting is required to report in time, the person who might be feeling that they are close to child abuse will be afraid to come forward and ask for help from anyone, and we are going to have no chance for working with potential abusers or people who need rehabilitation without them feeling that they will be reported by clergy or counselors, and so they will be afraid to seek assistance. And lastly, I think the state needs to do more with rehabilitation and working with both the victim and the person who's accused of such a crime to prevent these crimes from occurring. That briefly is my area of disagreement. Much of the other I agree with entirely.
Thanks.
So these are my feelings. I don't know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Slusher. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Hurley?
Not right now.
Representative Taylor? Representative Kopenick?
Thank you, Marty. We'd like to have your written testimony if you could send it to us. Thank you.
Representative Thompson? And we note the presence with pleasure of Representative Hanlon. Do you have any questions, Representative?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slusher. The next witnesses we have are from Ketchikan. We have Francis McLean. Is Mr. McLean there, or Ms. McLean, as the case may be?
I'm sorry, this is the moderator. Francis McLean is just observing at this time.
Is Floody Richmond, does the Floody Richmond want to testify?
No, thank you, and it's Floyd, F-L-O-I-D.
I'm sorry, Mr. Richmond. Please excuse me here. How about Sherry Kochlin?
She's approaching the mic. It's Kochman, and no, I don't intend to testify. Thank you.
If everybody please excuse my pronunciation, we're doing the best we can here. The next witness is from Matsu, Shirley Covington.
No, I don't wish to testify. Thank you.
Mrs. Taylor. The next witness is from Anchorage, Tom Barth. Mr. Barth.
Mr. Chairman, this is the moderator in Anchorage, and Mr. Barth has indicated he'd like to observe for a while, and perhaps if you poll later, testify at that time.
Now
thank you.
Hold your peace.
I will assume that these people will not testify unless they let the moderator know to the contrary. I'm not about to re-poll. If any of you wish to testify, you'll have to notify the moderator, and we'll put you on the list at that time. Is Dana Fabe in Anchorage available to testify yet?
This is the moderator. No, sir.
Okay.
Ask if anybody's anywhere.
David Jensen. Where is David Jensen from?
Anchorage.
Is David Jensen, I believe, in Anchorage? Does he want
He's
to testify?
He's
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm going. Are there witnesses who wish to testify? Any other witnesses who wish to testify in Anchorage?
No, sir, not at this time.
Barrow?
We have only observers left, thank you.
Delta Junction?
This is Sheldon. We have no participants.
Anybody from anywhere in the state, rather than going through the whole list.
This is Ethan, Alaska.
Would somebody from Unalaska like to testify?
Yes, sir. This is Pete Davis. I'm the Public Safety Director in Unalaska.
Please proceed, Mr. Davis.
We just cut this program.
Yes, sir. I'd like to just make a comment on House Bill number 88. The first section, endangering welfare of children, I agree in total with the intent of this bill. However, I feel that while the bill is proposed to protect children and is going after the guardians or adults in charge of these children while neglecting them, I feel we are neglecting a large segment of the juvenile population. To be specific, I'm talking about runaways, who are, in fact, in the same situation as this bill is trying to protect other children. They are being neglected. They are exposed to the same possibilities as outlined in the bill, and yet there is no legislation being done to protect these children. And public safety as a whole is relatively ineffective as far as runaways go. And I feel this problem should be addressed also.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Hanley.
No questions at this time.
Representative Thompson. Representative Kopanen.
Not at this time.
Representative Taylor.
Not a question. I'd just like to inform the witness that there is presently pending before the House legislation to take care of the runaway problem. It's called House Bill 19. We have already had some testimony on it. I think in this committee, one of its sponsors, I'm one of the co-sponsors, Mr. Phillips, Randy Phillips is the sponsor. You may wish to contact either of us, and we can give you further information at a later time. My name's Robin Taylor, and you can contact us at Pouch V in Juneau.
Representative Hurley.
No.
Yeah, this is Max Gruenberg again, Mr. Davis. We are well aware of the problems of runaways. And by the way, Representative Randy Phillips is here in the audience. And Representative Taylor and Representative Thompson and myself are the subcommittee who are dealing with the runaway problem. Representative Phillips' bill, House Bill 19, of which the LIO office or we, if you have a problem, can get to you, is a starting point. And we're having the Legislative Council draft comprehensive legislation to deal with the problem. That will hopefully be constitutional and survive any possible difficulty. And we're going to be meeting and working as a subcommittee on that bill this Friday afternoon. So we're well aware of the problem, and we sympathize with what you've said completely, sir. Do you have anything else to add?
No, sir. Thank you. You've enlightened me tremendously. I'll try and keep track of that bill. Thank you very much.
Yes, please. And let us know if you have comments on that legislation, and anybody else out there who has comments, we'd like to know. Is there anyone else from any location who would like to testify?
This is Suzanne Costabier. We do have one participant to testify. Her name is Skeeter Jepson.
Ms. Jepson, would you like to step forward and testify?
Hello?
Hello.
Okay. My name is Skeeter Jepson, and I represent the Child Sexual Abuse Task Force that was formed about 2 or 3 months ago here in Costabier. And just to give you an idea as to who all is involved in it, so that you won't think that I made some of the decisions on that pertain to some of these bills by myself. We have some parents on there. I'm representing the school. We've had people from the Department of Family and Youth Services. We've had the judge come over. We've had the assistant DA there, the public defender, the women in crisis, someone from the Costa Police Department, the Alaska State Troopers, and, of course, Manila. So there's a... It's a community thing, okay? And all of these are volunteers. We all sit down, we all talk about this, and we're still trying to work out a bunch of things that deal specifically with child sexual abuse. But back to what we're talking about today. On House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, we met and we'd like to change something on line number 11, whereas existing law permits. We'd like to change that permits to require, and we'd also like to encourage this to be made into a bill. And we talked about this one because you can encourage someone and you can require someone. Those are two distinct, different meanings. And in order for this resolution to work, it's got to have some teeth in it.
Is there anything else you would like to state before I open this up for questions, ma'am?
Yes, I've got a whole bunch of comments on House Bill 67 and House Bill 88, and if you'd like, we can go one by one.
Well, let me ask if anybody has any questions on this before we launch into that. Do any of the other members, Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. my own involvement in this stems from my participation on the school board in Kodiak for several years, and having been privy to the Alaska Association of School Boards resolution in this area. And I want to ask the last witness if they're aware that last year the legislature passed a law requiring fingerprinting of employees. Are you aware of that?
She said she wasn't aware of it.
Well, she answered no, she wasn't aware.
Right.
Okay, thank you. And I want to correct something I just said, not requiring, but rather making it possible. And this resolution really goes hand in hand with last year's law. And you're correct in pointing out the difference between encouraging and requiring anything, background checks, fingerprinting, etc. Well, I think you need to be aware that there are some very sensitive legal questions involved in these kinds of things, and frankly that these kinds of changes take time to implement, and frankly it will take time for school districts to become comfortable with these kinds of regulations, and for NEA and AFT and groups of this nature that represent professionals in the school districts to be comfortable with these kinds of additional regulations on their members. So my feeling is that your point is well taken, but for my part, I'm very encouraged by the resolution here and by the action of the legislature last year and these other bills which deal with the same general area, and in particular with Representative Phillips and his willingness to go forward with these kinds of things. So for my part, I'm satisfied with them, and I hope that you will be too. We're moving in the right direction, and we can't take so large a quantitative leap in any one year that people become gun-shy. So, thank you.
Are there comments from other committee members? I'd also like to welcome the final member of the committee, Representative Fritz Pettyjohn, and note that the committee is all present here. Any other questions for this witness? Ms. Jepson, on your comment on line 11, suggesting of House current concurrent resolution 2, that the word permits should be requires. Unless I'm not reading this statute right, AS 12.62.035, I don't believe it mandates that an employer must seek some information. I think it merely permits them to do that. Am I right? The audience here is nodding. I think not nodding because they're asleep, but nodding because they agree. I don't think the present law requires employers to seek this information. It just permits them to do so.
So, in other words, to change the word "require," we'd have to change AC 12.02.035, right?
Yes, ma'am. That would require an amendment to the existing statute. Which may be something you'd like to consider, but at present, it's permissive, it doesn't require. You said you have some other comments on the other bills. Would you care to testify briefly on those? And we would welcome any written testimony, specifically if you have some line-by-line changes you'd like to make. We can either take that now or take it in writing, and certainly if you testify now, you can still submit something in writing. Would you like to say anything on those bills?
The other thing that deals with number two is whether it's constitutional or not. Going into House Bill 67, if you'll look on line number 15, where it says, here's the evidence of a statement not otherwise admissible, may be made by a child under the age of 10 who is a victim of the offense described in the conduct establishing, etc. Why the age of 10 was one of the questions.
Representative Phillips is here, and he is now approaching the microphone. Representative Phillips, would you care to answer the question, sir?
Well, this is Representative Phillips. This proposed piece of legislation is based on the Washington State statutes. The statutes in Washington are canned. To my knowledge, it probably would withstand a better constitutional test rather than 16. I think, is the primary reason for the age of 10. I also understand, I read the attorney from the AG yesterday, said that the Washington State Supreme Court upheld that state statute 2 or 3 weeks ago. So apparently, in the eyes of the Washington State Supreme Court, this is constitutional.
Ma'am, is there any other testimony you wish to offer at this time?
Rather than setting an age limit on number 15, would it be possible to change that to have a child psychologist either give a yay or a nay on this? And I guess you answered my question. The other question we were going to come up about hearsay was whether anyone got opinion from the AG's office on whether this is constitutional or not.
We're in the process of doing that now.
again, there's on line item 15, here you say legally charged with the care of a child under 18 and under, you had 10 years there. And I've looked over a number of other bills, and there's a lot of inconsistencies about what age a child should be. On House Bill 88, you say 18. On House Bill 67, you say 10. And I've got a number of other bills that I can look up where there's an age 16 in there. I think that if we're going to be dealing with children and we're given an age, it should all be consistent.
Ma'am, you understand that we would look and pass one of these bills, not the concurrent resolution now, but we're taking a look at two alternative approaches, either House Bill 67 or House Bill 88 or something else. We're not going to pass both, so we'll make one decision in the legislature on this.
Okay, so either one that you pass, you're still going to have an age limit on there.
Well, we may or we may decide to do something else. We'll take into consideration all testimony, including yours, that there not be an age, but that a psychiatrist or other qualified person would testify in an individual case. That's another alternative. We have made no decision on this yet, and we're only taking testimony now.
Okay, if you go down to line item 17, circumstances creating a substantial risk of physical injury, we'd like to add, or suggest that you put physical injury or sexual abuse into that one, making it, would be endangering the welfare of a minor in the first degree as a class of felony. On page 2, once again, why 16? Why the age of 16 on line item number 18? And I guess you explained to me that either House Bill 88 or 67, one of the two is going to pass, we hope. Once again, there's discrepancies there about the age limit. If you turn to page 5, the penalties for violation, does this mean that you cannot hold a child overnight in jail if they were picked up like about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning?
We have a deputy commissioner from the Department of Health and Social Services, Connie Sipe, who's an attorney, who will answer your last question.
Ms. Jepson, this is Connie Sipe. Yes, it does mean that because we do currently have that. Unless the child is also breaking some other law, like consuming alcohol, something that's otherwise a violation for a minor, they are not supposed to be held in a jail. And that's been one of the problems in the past is that the curfew violations haven't been very well enforced at all. In fact, Judge Tunley is one of the people who requested some work on this to revise it so that the juvenile could be cited, sent on home, or you know, make sure he gets home. This isn't a runaway, it's just someone who's out past curfew, we assume, and then could be called to come into district court and answer his or her citation later and deal with it.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Jepson?
Yes, it does. I had asked the commissioner there, and I talked with Dolores Smith, her secretary, I guess, or yeah, with Connie on January 30, and I had asked her about truancy. Where does truancy fit into the picture? I don't know if it would be under House Bill 88 or if there's a House Bill or a law that's separate from these that deal specifically with truancy.
Ms. Jepson, this is Connie Sipe again. To my knowledge, when you and I talked, I told you I'd send you all other bills. I hope you got that packet that deal with the children's issues this year. To my knowledge, no one has introduced any bill relating directly to truancy, and the governor did not choose to introduce it in House Bill 88.
Representative Taylor?
I may be incorrect.
Yes, ma'am. There is a current law on the books in the state of Alaska which provides that if, in fact, a child is absent from school and the parent cannot provide an excuse, reasonable excuse, to the school board, that the school board is required by that law to bring a criminal complaint against the parent. The parent can be fined up to $50 a day and can be held in jail for up to one day for each day the child is not present. As far as I know at this time, it is routinely being disregarded. There are no school boards in the state that are following through with the law they're required to follow through with, and the district attorney's office is looking the other direction too. Nobody wants to address the subject. If you would like to have it addressed, though, I'd sincerely recommend that you contact your district attorney, your school board, and explain to them what the state law is. They have a copy of it too.
Does that answer your question, ma'am?
It sure does. I hope it works.
Are there other
costs? Just fine.
That was Representative Taylor. Are there other questions or comments, ma'am? I don't know how many other people we have around the state. We were trying to limit people to 3 minutes, but I'd like, if we can, to briefly proceed and complete what you have to say.
I do have copies of the bills that Commissioner Weiss sent to me, and we did go over them, but I don't know if this would be the appropriate time to make some comments on them.
No, not unless it's on these bills that we have in front of us. We appreciate your comments on the other bills, and we'll be happy to consider them in writing. I know Ms. Seif would also. She's nodding here. So if you could send that to her. Unless, do any of the committee members have any further questions of this witness?
I just want to make a comment.
Representative Hurley.
This is Katie Hurley. I just want to comment that I think it's great that you got so many people together to discuss and look into this legislation and continue the good work. It's great to hear your voice again.
I'm glad you were on there, Katie. I meant to say hello.
Ms. Jepson, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have other comments on these bills?
No, not at this moment in time. Thank you.
Representative Taylor, do you have anything else? Representative Copenin?
Yeah, just on that whole issue of truancy, there's a whole section of the law, Chapter 30, 1430.010 to 1430.050, which has to do with truancy and appointment of truant officers, which lists the penalties and the ability of the school board to direct people before the court for failure and the fines and so on. So they're fairly heavy penalties. It's a matter of enforcement, as Judge Taylor pointed out.
Representative Pennyton.
No.
Representative Thompson. Representative Hanley. Ms. Jepson, thank you very much. Are there other witnesses from around the state who would like to testify at this time?
Henry Kilmer, Dillingham.
Please commence.
This is Henry Kilmer. I'm superintendent of schools in Dillingham. Just very briefly, the bill number 2 that encourages local school districts to implement background checks. We strongly encourage that bill. However, again, the word encouragement, we wish it was something stronger than that. That we need a little more backing in that, because in the process of implementing that kind of statute, we come to considerable argument with local teacher associations and others, and some kind of stronger backing than just the word encouragement would certainly help us. We strongly support that kind of legislation. The other one that I'd like to talk about, I believe there you have a funding bill for normal operating expenditures for the Division of Children's Services, and in particular for the probation officers that are in our area. We currently have only one probation officer working with juveniles in the entire Bristol Bay, Kodiak, and Aleutian Chin area. In that same area, there are 7 or 8 social workers. And we have enough cases that person could be confined just to the Dillingham, Bristol Bay area, yet he has an area much larger. We need some kind of legislation that increases work with juveniles. It's not uncommon in this area to have a juvenile go 3 and 4 months from the time of some crime until probation officer sits down and deals with it. In that length of time, the seriousness of the case and how it affects a juvenile, we've lost all the effectiveness of the juvenile. And he somewhat laughs at our judicial system because of that length of time that the probation officer takes to reach him. And it's no fault of the probation officer, we just don't have enough help.
Commissioner Seif, would you care to respond to that?
Mr. Kilmer, Yeah, I think what you're doing is you're speaking on behalf of the governor's budget. There is an increment in the governor's budget which would fund an additional probation officer and shift a position from out to your area, to Bristol Bay area, I believe, based in Dillingham. So the department appreciates your support of that. There will be later testimony on budgets and things. You may want to follow that.
Mr. Kilmer, other comments?
No, except if I can help on any of those in any way, I'd be more than happy to. Thank you.
Thank you. Your support would be greatly appreciated. Other questions of Mr. Kilmer by members of the committee? Representative Hanley, Representative Thompson, Representative Pettyjohn, Representative Copeland, Representative Taylor, Representative Hurley. Thank you very much, sir. Other testimony by other witnesses around the state?
Pardon me, Representative Grunberg. This is David, the moderator in Anchorage.
Yes.
We do have one individual who would like to testify. Her name is Frances Purdy. She's from the Municipality of Anchorage Abuse Prevention Program.
Ms. Purdy, please come forward.
Thank you. She's approaching the microphone.
Frances Purdy. She was my guest.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. Again, my name is Frances Purdy, and I am in charge of the Abuse Prevention Program for the Municipality of Anchorage. The Abuse Prevention Program deals with child abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, and elder abuse. What I would like to do is give my comments on each bill and then stop and let you ask me questions. On the concurrent resolution number 2, I believe that it is a very positive bill. There are some aspects in House Bill 88 that further describe some convictions that might be important for you to also consider, and those two convictions are criminal trespass, just a moment, the other one would be disorderly conduct. Both of those pertain specifically to domestic violence and violation of restraining orders. The reason those would be very important to consider is, as should Senate Bill 29 pass and expand the definition of domestic violence, there will probably be more convictions on the violation of that, and most of those convictions are, in fact, criminal trespass or harassment that are often prosecuted under disorderly conduct as well as harassment. That's my comment on current number 2.
She says she may be expanding it, basically.
Thank you. Do you have other comments on these bills?
Yes, sir. On House Bill 6, may I proceed with House Bill 67?
Please.
Thank you. On House Bill 67, I would like to support your effort. I do have some reservations on House Bill 67. The primary reservation is in terms of actually changing the evidence rule when it comes to grand jury. Obviously, a grand jury does not allow for cross-examination, and even though it would be advantageous for the child not to be present, I really question whether we need to open that up for possible violation of the rights of the offender or the alleged offender. The other thing, in terms of allowing hearsay, there is a case, a 1983 case called Van Hatten, that came out of Fairbanks. It was a sexual assault case that greatly expanded the ability of hearsay evidence to be admitted once the child actually comes on the stand and then for a number of reasons cannot or does not testify as to his or her original statement. The Van Hatten case has been used quite successfully both with child sexual assault and with women who have been battered and obviously get on the stand and either change their testimony or are not quite as capable of testifying in court as they did in their original statement. We have been able to admit the, quote, hearsay evidence by producing the original person to whom the victim spoke either at the time of the incident or shortly after the incident. And I would encourage you to really consider Van Hatten in lieu of a lot of the language that you're putting into both House Bill 67 and House Bill 88. No matter what, in House Bill 67, 7 if you are in fact going to expand the hearsay or the special privileges for a child, I would urge you to consider age 12 and not age 10. This may seem contradictory, but if you're going to expand it, at least expand it to the age level where a child reaches symbolic language. Before age 12, it is questionable whether a child can consistently provide for the symbolism that is necessary to actually describe what has happened. So if you do expand it, please consider age 12, though as a personal recommendation or as a recommendation in terms of reviewing the legislation, I would suggest to you that probably House Bill 67 really does not need to be introduced in light of the Manhattan case. Those are my statements on House Bill 67.
Any other comments, Ms. Purdy, before we open it up to questions on any of the bills?
I'm trying to get to House Bill 88 notes. Hold on half a second.
Ms. Purdy, before you go any further, you mentioned a case called Manhattan. Do you happen to have a citation on that handy with you?
I don't have the actual. It's Manhattan versus State of Alaska, 666. It's a Supreme Court decision in Alaska. I don't remember the rest of the citation.
We can find it if it's in volume 666. Nancy, would you get that and distribute it to the committee?
Size of beast.
The actual citation, sir, is 666
Pacific Second.
Hills of Alaska, 1047, July 15, 1983.
Thank you. That's enough. We can easily get it with that. I mean, you certainly can continue testifying that. We have that. That's a sufficient citation. Please go right ahead with your testimony, ma'am.
Could you bear with me and go ahead and ask some questions? I seem to have lost my notes on House Bill 88.
Yeah, before I turn this over to the rest of the committee, I was lost with the first part of your testimony where you were talking about criminal trespass and stuff. What was that related to? I didn't understand what you were referring to.
In House Bill 88, you refer, in House Bill 88, there's a description on page 5. That describes the crimes that might pose a risk to a child. And those crimes, I believe, are the crimes that you would like to have some kind of printout so that if someone applies for a job, you can find out if they have in fact been convicted. What I'm suggesting is that there needs to be two more crimes included in that list on page 5. And that's criminal trespass and harassment, because those particularly speak to violations of domestic violence orders.
I see. That's very clear. Have you found, well, first of all, have you found your notes, or do you want me to have it opened up for questions at this point?
Could you open it up for questions, please?
Certainly. Representative Hurley.
I don't have anything right now.
Representative Taylor, Representative Kopanen. None of the representatives have any questions for you. If you're in the process of finding your notes, we can stand by for a second. Oh, Representative Kopanen.
The note that I took when you were originally testifying stated criminal trespass and disorderly conduct. Did you mean harassment as a third one or in place of disorderly conduct?
Sir, harassment often is prosecuted as disorderly conduct rather than just harassment. So it depends on the jurisdiction and which prosecutor is actually doing the case. And you may wish to get further testimony from the DAs or other or prosecutors.
Okay, there are two separate statutes, so presumably we would include the three instead of the two.
Is there any other testimony you have at this time, Ms. Purdy?
On House Bill 88, I believe there have been some questions by other agencies, and unfortunately I can't speak with them to them in great detail, and that's the first Section 1 on endangerment and welfare of the minor. I know that at least two agencies, Alaska Youth Advocates for one, and perhaps some of the people involved in guardian ad litem, have some feelings about raising the from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony, and apparently they feel that this may in fact hurt the actual prosecution by raising the level of the charge. The content of my testimony is more to encourage you to seek opinions, because that is not my field of expertise.
Thank you. Is there anything else you wish to add at this time?
Again, on the hearsay evidence on page 2, I would like to encourage you not to change the evidence code for grand jury, since, again, at the grand jury level, there is no cross-examination. In my experience in working with victims, the grand jury is often a very good preparation for the child victim who will later have to go to court and face the alleged perpetrator. The grand jury is obviously not a very comfortable experience, and yet there are many safeguards in the sense that the prosecutor and the district attorney can prepare the grand jury to ask questions in a non-harsh manner for the child, and that is often good preparation. In any event, I would not like to see hearsay evidence, especially non-qualified hearsay evidence. It could be first party, second, third, and so on. Would not like to see that kind of evidence brought in to a grand jury.
Thank you, ma'am. Anything else?
If I may go on page 3, I really would like to commend you and support your extending the rape shield rule to child victims of sexual assault. That is a very much needed part of the proceedings. I'm sorry, this is out of order. I would like to also support your definition of mental injury, or adding the other part of neglect to the definition of child abuse and neglect. That will definitely support programs in being able to access federal funds on child abuse and neglect. On page 9 and page 10, those people that shall report on suspected child abuse and neglect, again, I would like to commend you in expanding the number of people that have to report. Traditionally, what has happened is that people in the healing arts and social services profession have often not reported because they didn't feel that they were part of the statute. This will definitely bring them face to face with the reality that they do have to report. One of the problems that you may want to take a look at is in section 47.17060, evidence not privileged. You do state that the psychotherapist patient privilege is in fact privileged information, and yet on page 9 you name almost anyone that will do psychotherapy, and it becomes very difficult to find that in a way that those of us out in the field will be able to figure out at what point our information is privileged. By the way, there is a very diverse opinion on whether psychotherapy client relationships should in fact be privileged when there is some question about suspected child abuse and neglect. Some people believe that it should never be privileged because of the possible endangerment of children, and other people believe that it really should be privileged because otherwise the potential offender or the alleged offender may never reveal that act has occurred, and therefore we may never be able to get help to that child or to ever prosecute that as the alleged perpetrator. I'm sorry to give you two different opinions, but this is a fairly controversial point amongst counselors. That ends my testimony.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Hanley.
Yes, Ms. Purdy, I was interested in the statement that you made about a grand jury being a good preparation for a child before going to court. There seems to be some controversy regarding how many times a child is required to testify. What is your experience as far as requiring a child to testify on numerous occasions?
Yes, ma'am, I agree with you that multiple testimony is, in fact, often very harmful for the child. The intent, I believe, of previous legislation that you have passed is to have a uniform protocol for interviewing the child to begin with. We also now have the availability of videotaped interview, so that the child actually would be interviewed only once, and hopefully on videotape with all the agencies, police, DFYS, any social service, school, whoever else is involved. And then that child would then have to go to a grand jury. Once they're at the grand jury, however, that is it. The child then only needs to present themselves at the actual trial, and then the videotape can be used for the actual testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson? Representative Kopanen? Representative Taylor? Representative Hurley? Thank you very much, Ms. Purdy, and it's nice to have you testify. I understand that we have a witness here in Juneau who would like to testify, Sarah Hornberger. Would you like to come forward, ma'am? You have to flip the little toggle switch up so that they can hear you.
Okay, I'm Sarah Hornberger, and I represent the Lake and Peninsula School District, REAA number 7. I'm chairman of the board, and I have lived 22 years in Alaska, first in Naknek, Bristol Bay Borough, and more lately on Lake Clark. I haven't heard any comments on any of this legislation that is the same as what our comments are. First of all, we back the legislation. We don't approve of the abuse of any living being, least of all children. We do ask you to consider the implications of the enforcement of this legislation in regards to its effects on school districts. I was really amused when I heard a reiteration of the truancy law. I'd really like some advice from some of you on how on earth we enforce that truancy law in our rural districts that are as widespread as ours are. If our teachers in the small villages are to begin reporting child abuse, in many situations, no matter how very, very much we try to protect these teachers in their role of informer, and excuse me for the implications of that, but it was the best word I could think of right at the moment. In those small villages, people are still going to know who informed. And this is going to cause a lot of trauma. There's going to be expense to the district. It may very well be that teachers will have to be transferred. It might be that we might have to buy out contracts. If a teacher has to be transferred, the expense is going to be to find another teacher willing to go in there, and moving expenses both ways. If we are going to start enforcing this and informing on these abuse cases, first, those people out there have got to be educated. They've got to be told that these teachers are required to do this. They've got to know specifically what is child abuse. There's a lot of variance in what people see as child abuse. And this is going to require some education. And we deeply believe that this program of education should probably be handled by health and social services and not primarily the schools. We'd like to bring to your attention that for our whole area, we have one social worker in Naknek. As these cases are reported, they're going to have to be investigated. There's going to be a lot of trauma involved, not only for the teacher who reports, but also for the families. There's going to have to be some social services for them. If abuse is reported and a child is taken out of the home and brought into Anchorage for a hearing or Fairbanks or wherever from one of these small villages, and then that child is sent home, there's going to have to be some counseling in that whole village. And before we're really, I just believe this from the bottom of my heart, before we are ever going to see any real improvement in the abuse situation of any human beings, no matter what their age, we're going to have some more action on alcohol and drug abuse in the rural areas. I'm not going to speak to the cities because I haven't lived in a city for so many years. I have absolutely no right to make any comment. But I do know our rural area very well. And in my opinion, the major part of this abuse occurs as a result of alcohol and drug abuse, primarily alcohol abuse. And I think that before this legislation is passed, that some consideration is going to have to be given to the financial outlay that is going to be necessary to carry through if this is going to be effective, or we may cause more damage in the long run than if we just went on as we are. And I believe that's all I have to say. I wrote this up so quickly that I hope I said all I should have.
You can flip your toggle switch back. Thank you, Ms. Hornberger. I'd ask if there are any questions from the committee, and I would remind you that when you answer, if you press the black bar down, then the people in the other parts of the state, who I'm sure are very interested, will be able to hear your answers. Questions from the committee. Representative Hurley?
Not right now.
Representative Taylor?
You asked about enforcement of truancy. Mr. Copeland indicated that Title 30 has some sections on that. It can be accomplished by the school board effectively taking the action indicated and having the district attorney follow through with that.
I'll look into that. I'll look into that, and I'll let you know how that applies to our district.
Well, the law is very clear, and it does work. It takes a school board with a little bit of gumption to bring it forward, though, even though it's a requirement of law that they do so.
Representative Copeland.
The only thing I can say is that part of the price of local autonomy is also local responsibility in this regard, and we haven't seen fit yet to back off from that.
Representative Thompson, Representative Hanley.
I just wanted to tell you that we appreciate your comments, and I think you have perhaps brought our attention to something that we hadn't realized with communities as small as the ones you're describing. I think perhaps there might be some unique problems there that haven't been addressed and we might have to give some thought to, so I appreciate your testimony.
May I make one more comment to Representative?
I have a question also. Okay. You go ahead.
I just wanted to say that out in the rural areas, we appreciate local autonomy. We really do. And we appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak on these. I didn't really know that I was going to get in on a hearing like this and have the opportunity to speak. But we can't always exercise local autonomy if we don't have the funds to do it.
Thank you, ma'am. I have a question. And something you said, that upon returning one of these abusers to the village would require village counseling. Did I understand that right?
Yes, I did. I say that it will require village counseling. And, these are small villages where everyone is related to each other, and makes real social problems. And I think that we're dealing with a whole village situation there.
That's a very interesting concept, and I've never really heard it expressed in those terms. I understand the problem, and I'd like you to go into a little more detail of what you mean by village counseling.
Mr. Chairman,
you have to speak.
No,
they can't. You can say I don't know.
Mr. Chairman.
Of course, Representative.
This is the kind of information. It's very difficult for her to speak out about that right now. I think it's the kind of information that you could talk to her privately about, and it would be a lot easier than to make that kind of a comment. I'll talk to you too later.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from any of the other witnesses? Thank you very much. I understand that Tammy Bidwell would like to testify from Soldotna. Is that correct, Ms. Bidwell?
No, she wishes to observe.
Thank you very much. Is there any other testimony from around the state? Ms. Seip, did you wish to testify today?
Only to answer questions at the committee.
Do any of the members of the committee have any questions today for Ms. Seip, knowing that she may very well return? Thank you very much. Unless,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
This is David, the moderator in Anchorage. We have one individual who would like to make a statement from Anchorage. His name is Thomas Barth.
Mr. Barth, please step forward.
Thank you.
from Anchorage, Alaska, D-A-R-T-H. I would like to comment on the two bills on that I've got in front of me, 67 and 88, that I just picked up when I walked in. And my comment is that I believe hearsay evidence from professionals should be allowed in court on sexual abuse and child abuse. And that when, as my daughter has gone through both of these, I feel it's very important that when school teachers and counselors or even police officers can come up with evidence on either one of these, that the child should be taken out of the house. As it is now, you can make these laws and the child can still remain in the house. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions from any members of the committee? What he's talking about is that the professional states what the child has related to him in court. I assume, sir, that what you're talking about is you would like to see the law expanded so that if the minor has made a statement to a professional, the professional could relate what the minor has said. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Does that lead to any further questions on the part of any member of the committee? Mr. Barth, I particularly appreciate your coming forward, and thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you.
Are there any other witnesses? Unless there are, the meeting is adjourned.
Yes, there are. Representative Bradford, right?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Hi, Representative Bradford, members of the committee. My name is Barkley.
I'm sorry, you are cutting out very badly. Would you please have the moderator check the equipment?
Okay, just a second.
That was funny.
This is Eva, the moderator for Ringlight. Do you hear me?
Very well, Eva.
Okay, I'm going to let him try again and see.
Okay.
Am I cutting out again?
No, flip the toggle switch and you probably won't cut out.
He's too close to the microphone.
You may be too close to the microphone.
Thanks. Representative Grunberg, members of the committee, if you can hear me, I'll go on.
Tell him yes.
Yes.
Yes. My name is Mark Regan. I work for Alaska Legal Services in Barrow, and teleconferencing is such that I am in Wainwright for the next couple of days, and I am still not cut off from the legislature. I speak as a concerned citizen and also as a lawyer who has clients who would be affected by these changes that are proposed by the governor's bill, House Bill 88. There are things in House Bill 88 that are good and there are things that are bad. I'd like to concentrate on the things that are bad and particularly on the emergency custody provisions of the bill, which are sections 12 through 14. It seems to me that the problems with the bill sort of fall into two categories. One is that there is procedural tinkering in the bill which will not work or which will have a bad effect. And the other is that there is a spirit in the bill if what you're attempting to do is to change the way people will behave before abuse is reported, you are unlikely to do it with the provisions of this bill. What instead you are likely to do is to expose people who probably should have reported abuse or done something about abuse and didn't do it after the fact, so that you can feel good about punishing them for what they have failed to do. I doubt that various provisions of the bill are going to change the way people act. What it will do is make it easier to get them afterwards, and I think there's something wrong with that. But to go back to the emergency provisions of the bill, I don't want to anticipate what Dana Fabe would have been testifying to you about on Section 12, which is on page 6 of the bill. But there is something badly wrong with Section 12, and what Section 12 does is cut the time a predisposition report has to be in the hands of people using it and reading it from 10 days to 10. Now, the problem with that, in the criminal context, or quasi-criminal context, something I'm not qualified to speak about because I'm not a criminal lawyer, I want to talk about it in terms of children's cases, where a child is adjudicated, a child is in pain. And when that happens, and a report is prepared by social service recommending a placement for that child, and under the approach of Section 12 of follow up on some of the recommendations, to call people and talk to them, see if they agree with the conclusion social service come to. And you need all of that time. You need all 10 days. I would venture to say in a criminal proceeding against an adult that if you cut the time of pre-sentence report, you had to be in the defense lawyer for 10 days, you have to be at the constitutional case goal with the U.S. Supreme Court. I think the parent should have the same sort of right not only to read a document, like a predisposition report, but to have the chance to use that document in making recommendations of their own. Going from 10 days to 2 days is simply unacceptable. Then, to go on to Section 13 of the bill, I think there, what you are going to be doing if you enact this, is to be changing what may be good and what may be bad, but is at least comprehensible, to something that will be very difficult to work with. What you have now, you have neglect and abuse, which are defined some sort of drafting mistake together in 4717, so that it's real hard to tell what is abuse and what is neglect. It's not hard, however, reading the emergency statutes as they exist now to figure out under what circumstances a child may be taken from home. A child may be taken if there's danger to that child's life. Neglect, or the child can be taken if immediate medical attention is necessary, leaving sexual abuse out of this. Either you have a child whose life is in danger, or you have a child who needs medical attention. Now, the changes that have been proposed in the governor's bill do not necessarily change that. They don't change anything in terms of neglect except to add a reference to medical attention, or which you can remove the abuse category. But the change that is made as to the abuse category is immediate removal from the minor's surroundings. And you can play with all sorts of definitions. I don't want to get into this too technically, but you have either a very dramatic expansion of the emergency removal power or you don't. The first thing you're likely to get about 5 court cases in a row trying to figure out what the change you're making is. If the committee is going to get into trying to fix this stuff, I think it needs to sit down and do some more drafting, particularly on the definition. What you have now is something that you can work with. You might disagree with it, but you're going to get, if you enact this particular piece of legislation, are lawsuits on what abuse and neglect mean, but the definitions, even the definitions part of the statute, that's just going to be trouble. On the next section, 14, this is not so bad until you consider how it's going to work. You are dramatically expanding the amount of time that a child can be taken by a social services worker placed in emergency custody. The delay before you get to a hearing is going to not double. Again, the governor's transmittal letter talks about the practice in Anchorage, it's never followed in Anchorage, the existing law, so we need to change it. The only good thing about essentially doubling the amount of time that a child is in emergency custody is it might possibly allow the court to appoint counsel for the parents in the interim. That's the only good thing I can see about it. Otherwise, you need to get this sort of matter, which is a serious intrusion on families, into the hands of a judicial officer as fast as possible, and the bill is going in exactly the wrong direction. I should stop there. I have other comments and suggestions. Bill, for the emergency, that's what I'm worried about.
Would you please, Mr. Reagan, let us have your comments in writing, Mark? We really value your comments. They're good comments. I think that they're worth considering by the committee, regardless of how the committee ultimately comes out on it. Now, are there questions? Representative Hanley.
Representative Kopanen.
Representative Taylor.
Just one comment. I'd really recommend to you that you and Ms. Fabe get those written comments down here to us. I have some very strong feelings along the same lines that you've expressed, and I'd like to have them put in writing so that the committee might have the benefit of your experience on those, in particular the increasing of delay and the shortening of time on reports. I've had to work with each of those things. It seems unfortunate to me that every time Anchorage finds themselves in a difficult position, that everybody in the state has to change so as to conform with the inability of Anchorage to comply with the law. That's basically what we're dealing with here.
Any other comments for Representative Hurley?
Since you're in Wainwright, I hope that you can get them to Barrow and get them down faster than if you have to send them by mail. It might take weeks. That was Katie Hurley talking, Mark.
Mark, I have a question. With respect to your comment on Section 12, At least it's been my experience as a family law practitioner, although be it in awful Anchorage, give Representative Taylor a bad time. Usually, these predisposition reports, if they're, as a practical matter, given 2 days in advance of the hearing, in most of these cases, the issue is fairly cut and dried, and people know what's going to happen. And if 2 days is not enough time, as a practical matter, it is the practice of the bar, the family law bar, at least where I practice, to request a continuance. What is the problem in making it 2 days and liberally using continuances if that is not necessary? Because in most cases, it won't be necessary as a practical matter.
Well, all I can say to that is that in bush areas, we tend to have one court with scheduling trouble. And if what we end up doing is in every case where we get a particular report and we have to react to it and we need more time, we have to be asking for continuances, then we end up off in another world a month away. The other thing, Representative Gruenberg, on the cut and dryness of a predisposition report is this. Anchorage is not overloaded with Indian Child Welfare Act cases, but bush areas, almost by definition, most of the things that our children's proceedings are Indian Child Welfare Act stuff. In a disposition under state law, one very important issue is whether placement preferences in the Child Welfare Act has been complied with. That's the sort of thing that needs a follow-up from advocates on the side of the parents and also particularly from a guardian ad litem. And because we have that responsibility in the disposition is the important point on that, we do need that time to investigate this sort of stuff, and then we have to routinely ask for continuances. Fine, and then we end up losing court dates and it all takes much too long and
it's too irregular. I see. I absolutely understand what you're saying. Any other questions from any other members of the committee? If not, we'd like to very much thank you to responding for the committee's request for your testimony. I see that there is another witness who would like to testify from Fairbanks, Terry Foster. Is Terry Foster desirous of testifying?
Yes, I'm here. Actually, the name is Teresa Foster, T-E-R-E-S-A. My residence address is 150 Dome Road, Fairbanks, Alaska. My position in terms of testifying here is I'm an attorney in private practice. I formerly was a prosecutor who prosecuted child sexual abuse and adult sexual assault cases. I presently serve as a representative on the Fairbanks Interagency Child Sexual Abuse Task Force, and I'm also the board president of WICCA, which is Women in Crisis Counseling and Assistance, the domestic violence shelter here in Fairbanks. After that rather long introduction, basically my testimony is real short. I'm here to advise you that the Child Sexual Abuse Task Force Legislative Committee, of which I'm a member, has extensively reviewed House Bill 88 and other bills relating to proposed changes in child sexual abuse and Title 47 laws, and we will be providing written input to the committee with proposed changes, amendments, and support for quite a number of those proposals. The reason that we're not prepared to do a testimony at this time is that the entire task force will not be meeting until February 14th to endorse the committee's recommendations, and so we don't feel at this time empowered to pass those on, but there will be rather extensive written input coming. The one piece of input that I am having here that's primarily on behalf of WICCA, as opposed to on behalf of the Child Sexual Abuse Task Force, relates to House Bill 88. And we're proposing that it be amended to include a new section that would address something different but related to the subject matter that's already included in it. We're proposing an amendment to Alaska Statute 12.55.100 by adding the words at the end of that section, quote, or payment to community service organizations that provide service to victims of the type of offense which the person is convicted of. What that statute is the restitution statute that provides that when a person is on probation, as a condition of probation, they can be ordered to make restitution to a victim. I found in my practice as an assistant district attorney that what that does not allow for is for the court to order payment to a community service organization that provides assistance to victims generally, that may be funded by the state, but the services are provided at no cost to the victim. The restitution statute is meant to reimburse the victim for direct out-of-pocket costs, and we believe, WICCA believes, that the community would be served by having the court have the any type of offenses where there's an agency providing services to victims of that offense. We would also propose amending AS 12.55.035 in a similar fashion by adding a subsection E, which provides a fine or any portion thereof ordered under this section may, in the discretion of the sentencing judge, be directed to a community service organization that provides service to victims of the type of offense which the person is convicted of. That statute is the one that basically gives the sentencing court power to order fines in addition to jail fines for offenses. Fines, by definition, go to the state, paid into the general fund, and we would be asking that that be amended to give the judge discretion to direct part of a fine, as distinct from a probationary condition, this would be a fine, into the community service organization. Again, the same rationale is there, that presently there are organizations that have limited funds from limited sources and competing for limited state money in many cases, providing services at no cost to the victim. And this would be a way of getting money from the offenders for any number of crimes into those organizations that are providing those community services. That's the only specific aspect of the bill that I would like to orally testify on unless there are questions. Other than that, there'll be written input coming.
We have some questions for you from the various members of the committee. Representative Copeland.
Yes, no real question, but we have a subcommittee set up that's going to be looking at the legislation and trying to draw up a comprehensive bill, and I'm sure that they will be very grateful for the written testimony so that they can have the material in front of them in their course of their discussion. So I'm glad to hear that it's going to be coming in written form. And the committee will be meeting during the next week, and it will be a while before we have a final statute. We're not trying to rush to judgment.
Representative Taylor.
Yeah. However, you indicated your group would not be meeting until the 14th. That's a week from now before you would even have a chance to approve it and send it down. We are under a limited session this year, and the sooner you could get that written information to us, it would really be appreciated so that we might move a little more quickly with it.
Actually, we probably could move more quickly. There is an executive committee that will actually, tell the truth, probably meet before the whole board meets on the whole committee meets on the 14th, simply because there's a lot of people from the legislative committee that cannot be at the meeting on the 14th. So we anticipate actually the executive committee will authorize us to send that information to you sooner.
We would expect that all of you would tell the truth, but if the executive committee will, that will be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hurley.
Nothing.
Representative Handler? Hanley?
Handler.
It's late in the day. Ms. Foster, I have a question, and it's something that I'd like you to take a look at. And when you proposed those two amendments to Title 12, that I'd like you to put a little memo or something with it, if you know. I'm concerned about the constitutionality of doing that, and whether it is constitutional for the court to direct that a fine be paid to a community organization, and also a second question, whether it's constitutional for the court to direct that restitution be made to a community organization, unless it could specifically be shown that, like, the community organization had paid a sum of money or something to the victim, and really there was sort of a subrogation theory involved. I'd like you to address those at your leisure, if you would, because I don't want to do something that may not be constitutional. Do you understand?
Yes, I think that the constitutional problem, if there is one, would be limited to the putting a fine, having a fine paid directly to the organization. I don't believe it exists in terms of the conditions of probation. I'll certainly, you know, comply with your request to the extent I can. The line of thinking, I think, that supports it is already the courts very frequently allow people to work off fines by doing community work, and they'll give the defendant in court a list of 100 service organizations, and they can take their choice and work at $5 an hour for these organizations to work off their fine. That's already done, something close to that. I think that it probably would be, if there is constitutional problems, they would certainly be answered by having it limited to an organization that had provided services of some kind to the victim. The section of the statute is titled restitution, and perhaps it would be necessary to state that this is not restitution. It's not restitution because the victim may not, in fact, be out any out-of-pocket costs, although she has utilized services that the state or the community is paying for on her behalf.
Thank you. By the way, Representative Taylor, when he was a judge, as I understand it, utilized that a community service concept very effectively. Are there any other witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, this is the moderator in Anchorage.
Yes, sir.
We do have one additional witness. Her name is Carrie D. Longoria.
Before she commences, is there any other witness from around the state anywhere who wants to testify? We have 10 minutes. Fine. Ms. Longoria, you'll be the last witness. Please commence.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Carrie Longoria, and I am a representative from STAR. Basically, we would just like the legislators to know that we do not now have a formal statement which to give to you, but that we are reviewing both the Bill 67 and House Bill 88. We will have some statements by February the 12th. I'm sorry that we can't have anything any sooner than that. What we would like to do is to extend an invitation to all legislators that are interested in a reception that will be held by the Alaska Network on domestic violence and sexual assault. At that time, many testimonies will hopefully be given, if not verbal or written, by the other organizations that are involved. I would like to extend the invitation. I hope you all can make it. Thank you.
Would you please tell us where and when?
The reception will be between 6 and 8 o'clock on Wednesday, February the 13th. The place is still to be announced. I'm hoping that if Paula Campone, who is our lobbyist in Juneau, will be able to provide the information before then. My guess is that it will be like this Friday or Monday, the 11th of February.
We understand that that's here in Juneau, and I understand further that we have gotten invitations. Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I just want the committee, the people at the reception to note that we'll probably still be meeting at 6 o'clock, so we'll probably be late to the reception.
Representative Hurley.
I just want the record to show that there's some testimony that was to come to the committee from MathSU, from Mrs. Lynette Drumbarger, and she was not able to attend but wanted it in the record, and I don't know where it is, but it was supposed to come through the copy machine, and I just wanted so that it is in part of this record.
Of course. The record is still open. We are not about to close the record, and we would welcome Ms. Drumbarger's testimony and anybody else, and Ms. Longoria, we would welcome your testimony. We'll be having hearings at least tomorrow. Thereafter by written testimony. We'll be happy to include it in the written record, disseminate it to the committee, and consider it. Are there other questions? Representative Hanley?
No.
Representative Taylor?
No.
And I have none. Thank you all very much. The meeting is adjourned.